Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine, the contest, the meetings, and the battlefield. I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired artilleryman. CBS News, visiting Professor Dickinson College, CEO, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. The meetings called emergency by the European Union members and NATO members in Paris yesterday and again today. Today, many of the leaders were in Brussels, so it was done on video. But in any event, it doesn't come to any conclusion whatsoever about a European force to sustain Ukraine's existence. The conversation between the United States and Russia took place in Riyadh. The agreement by the Secretary of State, Mr. Rubio, and the Foreign Minister of the Russian Federation, Mr. Lavrov, is for working groups to meet to end the war. We turn now to what about post-war? Because the battlefield will be shaped by the expectation. France and UK plan air power back, quote, reassurance force, end quote, in post-war Ukraine. Headline in the Financial Times from London in these last hours. Colonel, a very good evening to you. It looks like UK and France are getting involved now with air power. They emphasize air power dominates the skies over Ukraine, and that would assure success or at least guarantee what's left of Ukraine afterwards. Do you agree that air power can do it? Good evening to you, Jeff.
Good evening, John. It would be very important if it was as part and parcel of a ceasefire or a negotiated settlement. What would be key and essential is that air power operating under their individual flags of those two nations as an international force, perhaps under the auspices of the United Nations or the auspices of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe? Or is that aircraft there as a NATO force? If it's a NATO force, then it brings with it the full deterrence of Article 5 if, in fact, those aircraft were attacked. Second of all, it would largely, I think, still need some kind of American support, particularly for things like command and control, perhaps an AWACS deployment. There is a NATO AWACS, which would have to be agreed upon by all members for that to deploy, to provide the command and control, the intercepts of incoming aircraft, the direction of fighters to make intercepts and the like, and perhaps logistical support on the ground. So it sounds like they're talking about some kind of a no-fly zone. But at the moment, at least, John, I'm convinced that a ceasefire in this particular moment would actually be to Russia's advantage and not to Ukraine's advantage in the longer term. And in many ways, the Russians, I think, may be negotiating for that to give themselves a bit of a blow. Overall, though, I think we need to keep one thing in mind, John. I worry that on the Western side, particularly the United States side, based on the comments Mr. Trump has made and the meetings that have been held in Riyadh, the United States is negotiating for a draw. The Russians are negotiating for a reorganization of the security architecture in Europe. We need to keep those two political intents in mind as we see these military details being created for whatever kind of a settlement and part and parcel of that.
The battlefield, it will be on the table as they negotiate. So what does it look like? Kherson, Zaporizhia, Luhansk, and Donetsk are the four provinces Mr. Putin repeatedly mentions as annexed. They're ours. That is not the case on the battlefield. Russia dominates Luhansk and Donetsk Oblast. That's a province. It, of course, occupies Crimea, but very little in Kherson, almost nothing in Zaporizhia. So they're overstating their successes. At the same time, Ukraine is dug in, and Russia is not, to our surprise, running over, even with its superior artillery, running over the Ukrainians. So, Jeff, as we go to negotiation, because that's the intention of Russia and Washington right now, and Mr. Rubio mentioned that there will be participation by Europe in the working groups, perhaps. I don't know. We don't have any clarity there. That battlefield, does it look sustainable to you, or is this a deteriorating situation for Ukraine?
No, I think it's fairly sustainable. The Russians are making gains, albeit very, very slowly. They've been claiming they're going to take Pokrovsk, for example, in the Donbass for weeks, if not months. And they have made progress, but they have not been successful. The Ukrainians, as you pointed out, invaded the Kursk salient back in August. And Mr. Putin swore that he would drive them out in the very near future. Well, they're still there, controlling somewhere around at least a third or so of the ground they initially took. Despite the intervention of up to 14,000 Koreans who suffered grievous casualties, they still control a significant portion of the territory. But overall, for the ground, I think what's important, John, is Mr. Putin, Lavrov, and others have been very adamant and repeatedly said over and over exactly what their goals are. And they are what you just outlined. Full recognition of Russian sovereignty over those four provinces that they don't totally control, which would mean a Ukrainian withdrawal. Second of all, a reduction in Ukrainian military to something like 85,000. Thirdly, an election whereby a new government would come in because Mr. Putin claims that Mr. Zelensky is an illegitimate leader. And then both Ukraine and NATO forswearing any possibility of any future membership for Ukraine into the alliance. And then to twist the knife a little bit, some acknowledgement culturally of the changes that are being made, the Ukraine accepting Russia as an official language, changing towns and streets that have been made into Ukrainian names back to Russian names and the like. He has repeated that over and over. Lavrov repeated that over and over. And as the meeting in Riyadh was occurring, the Russian ambassador to the United Nations repeated that. So I see no suggestion whatsoever, and intelligence seems to back this up, of Mr. Putin have any intent on making any territorial concession at all from what he has already demanded.
You bring in the political warfare. We've talked about the battlefield. The political warfare is that Paris disappointment, no resolution. And Mr. Scholz, the chancellor of Germany, until he lost a vote in the Bundestag, and the election will be on Sunday. Mr. Scholz say it's too early. Don't even talk to me about that. Waving off the idea that there's going to be a European force. Poland says we will contribute no troops to Ukraine. That's Mr. Tusk. I don't have the Baltics. Sweden and Finland are too busy preparing for the post-war period. So right now, Jeff, I would say the political leadership in Europe is not adequate for the crisis at hand. And Mr. Trump is rhetorically making everything more difficult by name-calling Mr. Zelensky. At the same time, Vladimir Putin, it remains, to my knowledge, silent on this matter. He's allowing his counselor, Mr. Lavrov, to speak for him. It would appear, Jeff, that being disappointed in Europe is at hand. Are you disappointed?
Very disappointed, to say the least. I mean, if we watched the Verkhunde conference last week, we talked about that in our previous discussion, John, you had this announcement of a phone call. Then you had Hegseth, new Secretary of Defense, making significant concessions in speech in Brussels about there'd be no U.S. forces involved, that Ukraine would have to give up territory, that Ukraine would not be joining NATO. And then you had what can only be described and was described in even more hyperbolic terms by European officials, bizarre speech by the vice president, in which he excoriated European leaders for moving away from their values and how they should allow very extreme right-wing parties to participate, which shook the foundations of the Europeans. Though I'm told that many had been told in advance the vice president was actually going to give a speech where he announced the unilateral withdrawal of U.S. forces from Europe. So they were somewhat, perhaps, not nearly as upset as they expected they would be. And then the meeting in Riyadh, and while the meeting in Riyadh did talk about Ukraine, you know, they also talked about more relations between the United States and Russia, improved functioning of embassies. Yes, high-level team for negotiation, but talking about closer cooperation geopolitically and all the great economic opportunities in the future. So, and urging, by the way, that the G7 allow Russia to return to the G7. Mr. Trump has even said we should begin discussing removing the sanctions from Russia. So from the Russian standpoint, what was most important was not Ukraine, but Russia being brought in from the cold by the United States, treated as an equal. And as a consequence, I think the Russians came out of those meetings very, very delighted and hope that they can get Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin to a summit in the near future, which they think might be a triumph.
Roughly, Jeff, there are 2 million people who could be called upon to be troops of all of the EU or all of NATO. I don't remember which, but very few of them are trained. And that is part of the disappointment, that not only are they the leadership not agreeing on what to do about Ukraine now. They're not agreeing on the level of industrialization that they need to go back to in order to provide for a security force if there is to be one in the future. It would appear that they're sitting on their hands, Jeff. Why? Do we know why?
I think we know why, John, because of the unsettled political nature of their various societies. I mean, they're an aging population, number one. If you go to Great Britain right now, and there was an election today, Nigel Farage of the Reform Party would probably win on the very far right. We know Mr. Macron has been the most outspoken European leader about a European army and a more independent Europe in terms of defense decision-making. But he has extreme problems with the far right in his country and sits atop a very shaky government. And nothing's going to be decided in the short term until German elections are executed in about a week and we see the constellation of a new coalition and what the Germans do. Everyone is waiting for that to occur. We've seen new populist parties move to the forefront in Austria, in Holland, and elsewhere. So I think the popular opinion on the street is not to become involved, and therefore it's very difficult for leaders to lead, or else they're not finding the political courage to do so.
I mentioned about the German election, which is Sunday, the 23rd, a headline coming in within these last hours. Germany's Merz maintains lead despite setback in latest pre-election poll. Friedrich Merz's Christian Democratic Union polling at 27%, with far-right AfD at 20%. It's closing, Jeff, with days to go. And we have to believe that the situation in Ukraine is contributing to this. AfD is anti-EU, anti-NATO, anti-US, anti-anybody fighting for Ukraine, and pro-Russia. Does that about sum it up?
That's about sums it up, John. And there's many people believe, me included, that there has been direct Russian contact and Russian influence with the PFD, the Partei für Deutschland, even prior to these elections. A very strong support, for example, on the PFD side for oil and natural gas purchases from Russia if and when they came to power. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Mr. Merz, if in fact he is elected, as we all know, will have to create a coalition that will give him a majority in the Bundestag. And that may become a very difficult proposition if, in fact, the PFD does particularly well, as they seem they're going to, in the upcoming election.
NATO. What is NATO's future when we come back? Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News, Dickinson College visiting professor, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. I'm John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.